I know that some...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
Yes, the CJ Show is going to have a live show for NHL All-Star Weekend. Can you tell we're excited?
I'm going to tell you're excited. Like that's big Monday morning energy right out of the gate from Julian McKenzie. I love it.
I've been thinking about this all weekend, ever since I saw the poster go up.
Yes, sir. I can't believe it's almost All-Star now. Like, this has been on the radar, obviously. We've talked about it. But this season, to me, Julian, is like flying by, this NHL season and the days associated with it. So, what is it, like a week and a half, and we're going to be in the same room together with some of our 100%ers, no doubt?
Yeah, I mean... considering how early I'm getting in, we might be in the same room as each other even sooner than that, depending on each other's schedules. But we will definitely for sure be in the same room for the SDPN All-Star Takeover. We should have the link to the event in the description. You should be able to buy tickets. It's at the Rec Room in downtown Toronto. It should be on the Friday. It's a two-day event. We're going to be sandwiched in the middle of Adrian Provocateur's live podcast recording and the Steve Dangle podcast, which is a young podcast that needs your support because no one knows what it is.
People at Kingston know what it is after the weekend.
Yeah. Wow. You see those guys get after it over there? Over.
I love it.
That's good for them. That's awesome. It was fun seeing them skate around and do their thing at the game. That looked like a fun event.
Yeah. And they even put on those like jumbo balls and smashed into each other. I don't know what you call that.
Yeah, I don't know what you call those, like bouncy balls, or I don't know what you would call them. Anyway, maybe one day they'll get us to do some fun hijinks. But in the meantime, get your tickets for the SDPN All-Star Takeover two-day event. Link should be in the description. In the meantime, we got to get to the matters at hand. Corey Perry, we got to get to him. We'll do some pulse checks around the league. We'll get to your questions for Ask CJ. But we have to talk about the wildest story to come out from this past NHL weekend. Patrick Roy is back as an NHL coach. And he's already 1-0 with the New York Islanders. I never would have thought Patrick Roy would ever coach the New York Islanders. And I don't know how I feel about Patrick Roy working under Lou Lamoriello. There's a lot to take in with this. How did this come together? Why are we talking about Patrick Roy, New York Islanders head coach? What do you know about this?
Well, look, the Islanders were sliding into oblivion. And, you know, a lot of people, locally in that market, were starting to dial up the pressure on Lou. Is he going to make a trade? Ultimately, after they had to have a two-goal comeback in Chicago against one of the worst teams in the league and ultimately lose in overtime, you know, it mercifully brings Lane Lambert's tenure there to a close. And I think... you know, why Patrick Roy? Well, the guy's had a ton of success. And he's shown, especially at the major junior level in Canada, that he can be a successful coach. I think that, you know, one of the things that's probably prevented this from happening sooner, you know, because he's almost not quite 10 years, I guess, from his breakup with the Avalanche, 8 years he spent on the sidelines, essentially, when it comes to the NHL, is, you know, he's been known to be a difficult personality to work with. And he's typically wanted to have some kind of, you know, say in personnel matters. You know, he wanted to do a bit of the GM's job and all the coach's job when he was with the Avalanche, and that didn't work. Obviously, in the QMJHL, where he's run the Quebec Ramparts for years until winning the Memorial Cup last year, he stepped down. But, you know, he had a lot of say in everything that happened. And so I think actually with the benefit of, you know, 36 hours to digest this news, I think it makes a lot of sense that he's somewhere with Lou Lamoriello, because we know that there will be no struggle there. If there's a struggle, Patrick Roy's tenure on Long Island will be very short, because Lou you know, well, I'm not going to say he rules with an iron fist. He doesn't put up with any nonsense. And it's very clear that he's in charge when he's in charge of a team. And so I think it's in some ways the perfect place for him to land. Not specific maybe to like the way the team's built or anything, but more so just from a, how is it going to work behind the scenes? Because I think that there's clear, positional, this is your job as head coach. And you've done that very well in the past. And this is a team that needs coached up, and a team that really has not done a good job this year of protecting leads, is very much still in danger of potentially missing the playoffs. I mean, they're right in that big mix of teams in the Eastern Conference fighting for a couple wildcard spots, essentially. And so I think it makes a whole lot of sense. And very few teams have thought about this. I mean, the only other place that I'm aware that Patrick Roy has interviewed in the NHL is with Columbus prior to when they hired Mike Babcock last offseason. And in that sense, it made sense too, because what Columbus was trying to do with that hire was clearly get someone who was going to shake up the foundation of their team. We won't go down the whole Babcock road, but that's kind of was the mindset at the time. They were looking for someone who was going to really hold the organization accountable. Patrick Roy makes sense in that regard. He didn't end up getting the job with the Blue Jackets. I know there was a lot of smoke and fire and rumors about him in Ottawa, but nothing that I'm aware of ever became close there. There was no interview or anything with him, since Mike Landauer took over the Senators. But ultimately, you found someone with maybe the authority needed to have him kept in place, to not have it be a distraction in other areas of the organization. And now he's just there to coach.
Small question with the interview in Columbus. Was it just for head coach? Did he want to assume more power? Because that, for me, that's the biggest thing in all of this. The fact that, yes, you're right, Patrick Roy did want to be essentially judge, jury, and executioner when ruling a professional or otherwise not a hockey team. I was just curious if that was the case in Columbus, if he just wanted to be head coach.
I think he did. And that's the area, at least by Patrick's own words, where he's grown the most since – he had was it 3 years in Colorado as a head coach, that he's come to understand that, probably like anyone, he's reflected on his time there and realized he made some mistakes, and that, his attitude or his way of looking at what that job needed to be wasn't right. And ultimately led to his, by his own admission, he was the one who essentially broke up with the Avalanche. He walked away from the job, but it wasn't working. And I think he understands that to make it work, he needs to just be the coach, or maybe in a future job, he's just a GM, but he's not coaching the team in that case. Right now his skills are best, I think, aligned with being a head coach, and let's see how it works for the Islanders. I mean, it's an older team, very old team, I guess, by NHL standards. I don't know how much better they can be, but certainly there was a feeling of underperformance there. They did make the playoffs last year. And, certainly I think the minimum expectation is that they're back ultimately playing playoff games again come April. And so, that's the immediate task for Patrick Roy. And so, I do think he has come to recognize, what falls under his purview and where he should just leave well enough alone. And as I say, I think specifically Lou Lamoriello is his boss, or just, I don't even think we almost have to waste time thinking about could it go the other way. It will not go the other way. If it goes the other way, we'll be talking about another new coach behind that team's bench.
Do you really think their relationship could work? I'm really curious about it. One of my good friends, Max Van Oot, back home, hosts a really good podcast, Homeboy Max, put up this really funny tweet where, to represent, I think, Lou, you have a Coke bottle, and then Patrick Roy, you have those Mentos mints. You've probably seen the viral video from many years ago. You know what happens when Mentos gets mixed with Coke. Yeah.
I do not. I appreciate the sentiment, but if you actually look at Lamoriello's history, some of his most successful teams have been with similar kind of personalities, whether it was Jacques Lemaire in New Jersey for years there. I mean, even I got the impression anyways that it always worked well with Mike Babcock, who's a very challenging guy to work with as a GM, or proved to be. I mean, it's certainly, once the Leafs made the move to Kyle Dubas, after they moved on from Lamoriello, it certainly wasn't always sunshine lollipops between Dubas and Babcock. I think there was, some power struggles there. So I think that Lou, has shown, I mean, look, he's been in the game so long, he's worked with all kinds of different personalities. I think Lou's so respected, I want to say it, that, you know, everyone falls in line that kind of works under him. And so, I mean, only time will tell, but I'm actually, like, again, I've really talked myself into this one. I was as surprised as anyone when the announcement came down. Like, I had heard no whisper about this. Not surprised in the sense it was clear that Patrick Roy wanted to return to the NHL. Obviously, he had received consideration from Columbus. Like, I did expect him to coach in the NHL again. So that wasn't a surprise. But just in the moment, you know, just drops out of the blue on a sleepy Saturday afternoon in January that he's been, you know, brought into the Islanders. Like, that specific set of circumstances I didn't envision. But, you know, with some time to think about it, I really do think it makes sense. I think the probability that it works in the short term is actually pretty high. And I'm not just saying that because of the overtime win we've seen on Sunday night over Dallas. I just think that the mix could be right. And, you know, if nothing else, the Islanders go from a team, I think from a national perspective, it's kind of sleepy team, not a team that gets a lot of, you know, attention or, you know, I know that they have a really passionate fan base, but they're not a going concern in the broader NHL, but all of a sudden you put Patrick Roy on the bench and there's going to be some fireworks. You know, there's going to be some animated something, you know, coming probably as soon as the next game. And that makes him an interesting team.
Like, I don't know if, like, Patrick Roy's a fiery guy. He's a fiery competitor. And yes, like, him being head coach, like, it seems like he's humbled himself, but there's a part of me that just sees this blowing up in some way, if nothing else, to our entertainment. Because let's be real, when a lot of us saw that this was announced, a lot of us were sort of, obviously our eyes were widened at the news, but a lot of us were wondering, hey, are we going to get a repeat of him going at Bruce Boudreau behind the bench? Oh, he's in a situation where he doesn't have full control. Are we going to get to a point where stuff's just going to fester behind the scenes, but, and maybe he's going to one day get up in arms?
But you're automatically conflating that that's a bad thing. Like, I think that's what Lamoriello wants. He wants someone to wake up this team. Like, this is a veteran team, lots of guys on big contracts, a team of players that have had success both elsewhere and together that was underperforming this year. Like, I think he's looking for that reaction. Now, I'm not saying he wants Patrick Roy, that is, to go fight an opposing coach or knock down the stanchion between the benches, but I think he certainly is hiring Patrick Roy to light a fire under his players. That's the only that's what you get with Patrick Roy. You're right. As much as he might change and everyone mellows as they get older and everyone learns as they go through different experiences in life and all that stuff, I mean, he's still Patrick Roy. Like, this is what he is. I mean, you probably saw the video from the first morning skate he had on Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's not it. Absolutely. That's also what I'm banking this on too. Like, this is a guy who, with the barking and the yelling and stuff, I mean, I get it's a practice and there have been some players, you should, for people who are listening to this who haven't read Peter Baugh's article on Patrick Roy, you should go read it up at The Athletic. There have been some guys who have said, you know what, yes, there is a bit of that, but he does find a way to relate to some of his guys and try to get the best out of them. But seeing that video day one of practice going at his guys like that, not saying it's a bad thing, but it's very Patrick Roy. It's not surprising from what we've known from this person as a coach, a Jack Adams award-winning coach, mind you.
Right. And look, at that style, I think in general is hard over the long term with a team, but in this specific circumstances with slightly less than half a season left with a team that's not performing up to capabilities. I mean, I have to think again, I'm bullish on the move short term, and Lou Lamoriello is 81. So, well, I know he's got to think about the long term of the Islanders. Like, how long term is he really thinking? And Lou's in fantastic shape. I'm not alluding to anything. It's just, you know, he's not going to be the GM on Long Island for 10 more years. So, you know, this is, and look at the age of the core players of that team. Like, it is a very, very old team by NHL standards. I mean, they're built to win now. Certainly I don't have them in the top class of the league, but you just look, you do this stuff, you never know. And it, you know, we have talked about this. I think it's a kind of a wide open year. Maybe they get in the playoffs. Maybe they win a round or two. Like, who's to say? It's not, I wasn't predicting their back-to-back trips to the conference final back in those kind of pandemic years either. So, you know, that was a team under Barry Trotz where he got absolutely everything out of the roster and would not surprise me. I'll just say that if Patrick Roy turns the ship around and gets some excitement back in Long Island.
I have to see it in action to believe it, I guess. But I will be grabbing my popcorn for the Patrick Roy tenure as head coach of the New York Islanders, and I will also be saving some kernels for Corey Perry as an Edmonton Oiler. You were on the story. I know Dave Pagnotta from the fourth period was on the story as well. He joins the Edmonton Oilers. We've detailed the story of him leaving Chicago after a undisclosed incident. He now signs with the Oilers. What do you think of the signing? How many teams were interested in the forward? It seemed as if, you know, even though he was not playing with the team, there were a lot of different teams, or at least different reports, or at least some speculation was swirling around Corey Perry.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't his only option. I think that's a good way to look at it. I mean, certainly other contending teams, three or four of them anyway, I think were, you know, at least pursuing the situation. I mean, look, it's very unusual. You can add someone of Corey Perry midseason at basically a league minimum contract and in a tight cap league where you're not giving anything up in terms of, you know, it's not a trade situation where you have to, you know, peel away assets to bring him in. You know, that's an attractive option. Obviously Corey Perry's side of it, he sees the Edmonton Oilers like the rest of the league ripping off 13 straight wins. And you know, clearly announcing themselves as the Stanley Cup favorite that they were pegged to be in September. They looked lost for like a lost cause in early November. And here we are about to hit the All-Star break and they're right where we thought they were in terms of, you know, I think having a chance to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, that's what this is about at this stage for Corey Perry. I mean, in Chicago, when he signed there, it was a chance to, you know, go and be a mentor to Connor Bedard. I think, you know, had things gone differently, there was a chance, you know, he'd be in all the trade bait boards and we'd be talking about him getting moved to a contender, you know, in the advance of this year's Stanley Cup playoffs. Now he gets to sign with one. And, you know, the Oilers were interested right from essentially day one. I mean, Corey had mentioned in the statement he put out that he had to, or that he was choosing to attend to some issues with alcohol in terms of working with some experts in the mental health and substance abuse fields when his deal was terminated at the end of November. From my understanding, right from the minute Chicago moved to terminate his contract, he, you know, he showed contrition. He didn't fight their decision at that time. He essentially accepted his fate and, you know, has worked on himself for the last couple months. And, you know, we'll see where he's at entering Edmonton's lineup. But I think from the Oilers standpoint specifically, Julian, not a lot of risk here. I mean, again, they're a veteran team. Corey Perry's been a popular teammate, quite frankly, everywhere he's ever played. He's had almost 200 playoff games of experience, and he comes in at a low cap number basically to be a fourth line player on the Oilers. I don't think he has to do anything other than be himself on the ice for this to work for Edmonton. And look, they have some experience, right? Evander Kane was terminated in San Jose, and you know that's been a pretty successful marriage since he's gone to the Oilers, and I think that probably helped inform some of the decision making from Edmonton's standpoint.
Very curious where he fits in the lineup. You mentioned him as a fourth line forward; that probably makes sense. I've already seen people debate wondering if Sam Gagne exits the lineup in lieu of him, or if Connor Brown exits the lineup. I know he hasn't necessarily been producing all that well, but some people will contend that he still kills penalties for them. Do you think a fourth line role for his skill set really makes sense?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think this gives them more depth, right? And, you know, the funny thing is I don't think Edmonton's anywhere near done. Like this is not, this isn't just, you know, the final move and now, okay, chef's kiss and have at it. I think the Oilers are going to still be one of the teams that are reasonably active leading up to March 8th and the trade deadline. So, you know, that decision doesn't really have to be made. I think, you know, to make the cap work, they're probably going to have to most likely send a player down, maybe someone like Adam Ernie to the American Hockey League. So that's the short-term move. And then on any given night, who knows, maybe Perry won't play every game. Maybe when they have back-to-backs, they'll work things around between him and Gagne or someone like Connor Brown. I mean, that when you're in the management side, I think you're just trying to give your coaches options, and this unquestionably gives them another option. But yeah, I mean, I think Corey Perry is in the top 12 forwards on the team right now. I don't know. I can't say for certain who's going to sit at his expense right away or even 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now. But, you know, I don't suspect he would have been signing in Edmonton without at least some discussion about what the role would be, how he would fit, where the Oilers saw him. And obviously he would have to be comfortable with that before ever getting to the point where he's signing a deal.
I'm really curious about what's next for this team. And I know you said that this team's clearly not done with the trade deadline less than 2 months away. I got to watch them against the Calgary Flames over the weekend. we've known this team to be a high scoring squad. They play with speed. And but talking to guys like Mark Spector, who have covered this team for a long time, it seems like they've found a way to pull on the offense and be really good defensively as well. They haven't allowed too many goals in the last little while. And even the other night, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl were held off the score sheet against the Flames. It was guys like Warren Fogle who stepped up and played well. Zach Hyman got himself a goal. I think Sam Gagner actually scored the game-winning goal against Calgary. That was a really weird bounce off of Dan Vladar and in. So they've been able to get some scoring depth. But if they're able to add at the forward position as an example, like we're talking about a team that's really turned the corner looking even better. I'm really curious what Ken Holland does at the deadline this year.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them getting a depth D. I could see them still potentially trading for another goaltender to play behind Stuart Skinner, who as you mentioned, has been on a great run here and you know, strung together all these wins. Obviously, he's been in net for most of the 13 wins. And then, you know, I think the big piece that they're going to be shopping for is a player to play in the top six. You know, maybe someone to play with Leon Draisaitl. You know, this year's crop on the trade board is, as we mentioned, I know you don't like when I mention this because I'm trying to discourage everyone from getting too excited. I mean,
sell the trade board.
There's not that many huge options out there, but I think
sell the trade board.
I think any impactful forward, it's fair to assume Edmonton will be doing some diligence on. You know, whether it's Jake Gensel in Pittsburgh that gets moved. You know, I don't know. Detroit's been hanging in the playoff race. You know, they've got David Perron. Maybe if they fall out, we'll see what happens in Ottawa. I just think that Edmonton is going to go deep looking at anyone that they feel that could be fit into their top six. And, you know, it's a little too soon to start linking them definitively to those types of names. But I think those are the types of players out there that they'll be looking at. I mean, maybe even Jordan Eberle redux. You know, we'll see where Seattle ends up. But he's a pending unrestricted free agent on the Kraken. You know, it's had a bit of an off season to this point, but you know, there might be some vibes there for the Oilers after having drafted Eberle all those years ago. I mean, at one point Eberle and Gagne were the young future of the Oilers, and maybe there's a world where they're reunited. Again, I think so much of this will be predicated first of all on which teams truly are the sellers as we get into the mid stages of February, late stages and into March 8th. And then obviously the Oilers will be looking to buy the best player that matches with the assets and matches with their cap space that they can insert into the lineup. But I think that, look, there's a big understanding here that this is like, it's getting late early in Edmonton, right? And I'm not predicting players are leaving town or anything like that, but you just don't know what's going to happen with Leon Draisaitl entering what will be the final year of his contract next season. You've got 2 years beyond this one of Connor McDavid under contract. But I think that there has to be an understanding that with even just when there's any amount of uncertainty, you really want to make the most of each of these opportunities. And my goodness, if we draw a line from when the Oilers made their coaching change, I mean, I think they're 21-4 or something in that range. I mean, they've barely lost in almost a quarter of a schedule. And so this is a pretty good year, I think, to push the chips right into the middle.
Absolutely. Picturing Jordan Eberle, I'm sure we could find a Photoshop of him in an Edmonton Oilers jersey just in case people have no idea. I'm kidding. But it, like Jake Gensel in an Oilers jersey to me makes sense. It's just fun picturing him playing all those years in Pittsburgh with Sidney Crosby and then having to go work with, you know, the next guy after Crosby, Connor McDavid, is a generational player. But I would love a Jordan Eberle reunion, Seattle realizing what they have to sell, and they flip off Jordan Eberle back to Edmonton and he tries to win the Stanley Cup in the city that drafted him. Remember that first goal he scored with that team, the nasty toe drag?
Yeah.
He's got a lot of roots up in Edmonton.
And I'll say this too. I mean, the interesting thing about Gensel is you could have Vancouver and Edmonton both bidding pretty aggressively for him. I mean, you know, it's not hard to draw a line to, you know, Jim Rutherford and Patrick Galvin, who both worked with Gensel in Pittsburgh, had a lot of success with him there. Obviously, you know him and are comfortable with him. And the Canucks, you know, no secret that they're looking for, I'd say, a top six forward when we get to into this deadline window as well. And so, you know, there could be some overlap, maybe even beyond Gensel in terms of what these two teams are chasing. You know, two of the Canadian teams that absolutely have the best chance to end the country's cup drought and obviously are going to be, you know, maybe even facing each other in a playoff series. I mean, you can start to like, we can start to get excited about some of the chaos to come. You know what I mean? Between, you know, chasing the same players, but, you know, eventually having to go through each other possibly. I mean, this could be a year to remember for those that like seeing Canadian cities at war with each other on hockey Twitter.
Yes.
I don't mean literal war, but, you know, meme wars.
You could have said riot. I mean, that would have been more applicable for the Vancouver people, but, you know.
Too soon.
Really? Too soon? It's been this happened in 2011. I was in high school in 2011.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Guys, there's been a whole documentary and everything. It's all good. Anyway, I'll mention the Canucks a little later on as we do these pulse checks just for a couple teams around the league. We'll start with the Leafs because Ilya Samsonov got his first win in 2024. The Leafs, they calmed things down. I know the Vancouver game didn't go as well as some people liked, but they got a win over Seattle. We take a temperature on the team. Good, bad, just whatever.
I mean, look, it's just one of those years in Toronto where nothing is coming easily. A team that's had a ton of regular season success has typically been way ahead of playoff sort of cutoff lines and, you know, basically been comfortably in second place in the Atlantic Division for three seasons running. This year, it's a struggle. And, you know, I don't know what the temperature is because you're right. It goes up and down with each game. Look, they've come through a tough month, but for an Eastern-based team of travel, you know, having done their California trip and then a Western Canada trip, they come home. They actually before the All-Star break, they have a home-and-home with Winnipeg. They play Wednesday at home to Winnipeg and then go to Winnipeg on Saturday. So those are two tough games against another, you know, top opponent and you know, two more kind of emotionally charged games. Always all these games where the crowds split to some degree. So I don't know what the temperature check is. I will give you a weird stat. Martin Jones leads the Leafs goaltenders in wins this year. And it does appear, with respect to Martin Jones, who actually played a number of good games for Toronto, came in as a number three guy. But, you know, it appears that midnight might be striking for Jones. You know, he's had a couple tough outings. I thought, you know, one of the things that wasn't discussed a whole lot, at least in the media that I saw from the Vancouver loss on Saturday, was just that Jones, you know, was at fault for probably four of those six goals. Or just four of six you want to see a save on. And so, you know, somehow the Leafs are trying to patch it together. I mean, maybe we're seeing Samsonov rise again. Who knows? It's one game in Seattle. It's actually a pretty well-played defensive game for the Leafs on a back-to-back at the end of that road trip. So they weren't giving up a slew of grade A's against. But credit to Samsonov. He made the saves he had to. And we've documented what he's been through this season. Who knows? Maybe the next chapter in this weird Leafs year will be him taking back the number one spot. And, you know, I think probably the good news is Joseph Woll traveled with the Leafs on the road this week. You know, he's still recovering from his high ankle sprain, but he's on the ice. They only have two more games and then there's time off. There's the All-Star break. And so we don't have a firm timeline yet on Woll's recovery, but certainly it's going to be sooner than later. And they've somehow survived this to some degree. I know there's been ups and downs and twists and turns and, Steve Dangle pulling his hair out on the LFR every other night, but the truth is they're still in a playoff spot and Auston Matthews on pace for 70 goals and all is not lost. I just, you know, they're not in the top tier of teams. It's just this is where I get back to. Like, I'm not even excusing it. I think at some point you have to accept the reality that it doesn't mean sometimes a team comes out of nowhere to win a cup. And so the Leafs are just not going to be in the pack of front runners, I don't believe, as we get towards March and April. But they are going to be a team that has a chance because I expect them to make the playoffs and we're going to see. But, you know, the vibe check, the temperature check, whatever you want to call it, it's still all over the map. Like, you got people saying they have to go make five big trades tomorrow. I don't see that happening. I, you know, they're going to tweak where they can, take whatever run they can, and they're just not every year is your year in the league, unfortunately. I mean, look at Tampa. They missed the playoffs one year in their great run that they've had. You can go down the line. Boston did the same back 10 years ago. I'm not saying the Leafs are going to miss the playoffs, but they're not at the top of the conference.
Before I get to Boston, how did you manage to get through that Leaf segment without hearing all that noise in the background?
Which noise is that?
You mean you didn't hear Steve Dangle yell Brad the entire time you were talking about the Leafs, and it got louder as you said, there are fans that want to see five big trades happen?
Yeah, I mean, look, some of these decisions were cast in stone last summer, right? Like, there's only so much you can do mid-year, and I think at this point, it would be irresponsible for the Leafs front office to approach this deadline the way they did last deadline. Like, last deadline, it was the Leafs pushing a ton of chips into the middle, trading first-round picks and other selections to really bolster the lineup in multiple positions. You know, I think you have to be realistic about where you're at, and there's still a lot of time here. I'm doing the rough math here. January 22nd, this is a leap year. So we got 38, we got 46 days until the deadline. I mean, 46 days, there's still a lot that can be learned. Maybe the Leafs somehow go on a 12-game win streak, and the conversation on the pod really close to March 8th will be different. And I'll be sitting here just banging on the table saying they have to, I'll be doing Leafs Brad. They have to do something. But I just, at this point in time, I just think realistically they're not going to be making huge deadline moves, and they're just going to see what happens a little bit and then retool in the summer again. I'm sorry. Everybody wants everything right now, but it doesn't always work that way.
Okay. But you know, we've kind of talked about this already, but you know, the fans aren't going to stand for it. Sorry. It's just, what? They've endured too much pain. There's too much riding on the season. There's too much riding on this core.
Right. But the core is signed. Like, everyone but Marner.
Of course, signed, but they haven't won anything.
Okay, but just because this season, because look at, I don't know how anyone could watch this version of the Leafs and blame it on the core. I mean, Nylander literally is by far having his best season. Matthews is on pace for 70 goals. I'll repeat, 70 goals. He's got like 10 more than anybody else at even strength in the entire league. Like, those guys are doing their jobs. I think where the issues lie is defensively, there's clear deficiencies. Some of the players they have playing the bottom six are too one-dimensional and not giving enough options to the coaching staff. And so I think that's going to be on the front office to address. I just don't think you can address all that in season. I mean,
but at the same time, like, you mentioned it yourself, with Austin playing as well as he's been playing, Willie's been playing as well as he's been playing, you can't just waste those years. I get that, like, a lot of people are going to look at a year like what Toronto's going through right now, and they're like, you know what? Maybe you should just stand pat. Maybe this team just isn't it. But when you have young players who are playing so well in their careers, having seasons that they're having, like, you can't just waste it. Like, we've talked about this with the Edmonton Oilers on so many different occasions. This is the year it seems like they might have it together, and they're going to go to the deadline and probably get aggressive and try to get some winger, because they found a way to play great offensively and defensively. But there have been so many other years with Draisaitl and McDavid where they've played so well, and you're looking at Ken Holland and you're like, do something. Get a goaltender. You cannot waste those years. I'm sorry.
Edmonton didn't go in all these last years, though.
Well, look, I'm not saying that they should have, and that's my point. They should have. You can't waste those years. If they miss out on this year, they're one step closer to maybe Leon Draisaitl walking out the door, because you know what? They didn't get the job done, and maybe they can get more money elsewhere. If you're Brad Treliving, he's been a general manager in this league for a long, long time. It's but on him to find.
You're not a rebuilding guy to make a blue line midseason. Like, they,
you can't rebuild a blue line, but you can get somebody for it. I don't know. It's on him to figure that out.
Sure. I'm not saying he should do nothing. But I just,
oh, I'm not saying, I think we should, that, but like,
I think the expectation should be that it's going to not be a, like, a trading away all the first round picks and bringing in five guys. I'd be stunned if that happened.
Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens. I think just if you're the Leafs and you've endured all of this playoff heartbreak and misery, you finally win a playoff series, your best players once again are, you know, doing their thing when they can. I don't know. Every year, you can't waste those years. I get it. You can't win.
But just because you don't win means the years, like, every lost year isn't a wasted year.
No, fine. is it? But I don't know. Maybe it's different for Toronto because of
how
they've fooled around over the last how many years.
I mean,
they should be a lot further ahead in their playoff history than they are now.
I guess. I mean, like, I agree, but like, I'm not sure what you want me to say about that. I mean, of course, they've lost in the first round, what, like 7 of 8 years, and they lost in the second round the other year. Like, and they've been a consistently top regular season team. They are kind of like the Washington Capitals were once, and in 1 year, Washington punched through and won. Not saying it will happen in Toronto, no guarantee, but there's not just one path to a cup. And yeah, I'll leave it at that. I feel like we've monopolized this with more Leafs talk than expected this week.
Let's get to the Boston Bruins. I really want to know your thoughts on that team because they found a way to have the best record in the East in a post-Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci world. And not a lot of people thought it was going to happen, but there they are. They are 1 point off of the best team in the league, which is the Vancouver Canucks. They've been through more of the Elias Lindholm trade chatter. They've been linked off of the fact that they could use a center. If a guy like Elias Lindholm doesn't present itself to that team, I'm very curious about where they could be going ahead of the deadline, whether it's they find another center, they find another scoring winger, or they add somewhere else along their lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's only so much they can do. I mean, they have very tight cap situation as well. Lindholm makes sense for them. Sean Monahan might make sense for them, but I could say that for a number of teams. You know, Colorado, in both cases, I think makes some sense. Maybe Winnipeg could make some sense in both cases, and no doubt some others. So, you know, this is where the trade board gets. This is where it's a real part of our conversation, because I think once a couple of the names near the top move, unless there's a flood of unexpected players, like if one of a team that we're not currently sort of looking at as a potential seller comes out there, like I think the Bruins are comfortable, kind of like I was saying with the Leafs, just kind of riding with what they got and hoping a little bit. You know, we play the deadline up so much, and I'm fully part of this. I've been on like 12 years in a row of deadline shows. So like I cannot like remove myself to the side and say like, why do people get so excited about the deadline when I'm like been part of juicing it for more than a decade? But the truth is that the deadline is a period where there is player movement, but it's not like every team that wins has always made a big impactful move at the deadline either. And so I think the Bruins are comfortable with their culture. This was a bit of a reset year. Obviously, like they're introducing younger players like a Matt Poitras to the lineup. And I know he's been in and out with injury now since coming back from the World Juniors. You know, he might not be ready to be a true impact guy come this year's playoffs, but you know, I think they're hoping it's not going to be too, like he's going to be better for this year's experience. So, you know, I don't know that it's all in for the Bruins. I think that they are going to look to improve up front, but might not happen. I mean, look at their cap space. They just don't have a lot of room to maneuver. They've traded a lot of picks away, you know, kind of in the same spot as a lot of teams. Like last year, they were giving up a first rounder for Orlov, right? A rental player. I don't think they're going to have that same kind of approach this season, even though they are right back at the top of the league again.
Last year, they had Linus Allmark and Jeremy Swayman going back and forth. Allmark picks up an injury. Jeremy Swayman looks like he's assuming more starts this year. Like the Bruins just won't die. They won't die. They just will never die.
They have real organizational accountability. That's how I see it. That's the best I could. I mean, obviously they have very good players too. You know, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, Charlie McAvoy, you know, Hampus Lindholm, plus the goalies, you know, plus good support pieces. Like they're a well-built team, but on top of that, I think they truly hold each other accountable. I'll always remember the day that they signed Mitchell Miller and the next morning their stars players were calling out management in the media for that decision, including Marchand at the time, Nick Foligno and Patrice Bergeron before he retired. I mean, the fact that you had that happen, like that's a sign truly where everybody in the organization is held to a standard. They're kept to a standard. If you've got star players calling out management and there's no repercussions other than they undo the decision that caused the players to call them out. I mean, They've built what every organization wants to build, other than they haven't put as many Stanley Cup banners up in the rafters as they'd like, right? I mean, they've had a couple of cracks at it where they fell short. They do have that 2011 championship team. You know, but they're a little behind a Tampa, a Chicago, a Pittsburgh from this last 15 years in terms of, and LA even, of Cups won.
Okay. We'll gotta try to see if we can get to ask CJ what we got some time. But I do want to know your thoughts on what's going on in Ottawa. And we know this team hasn't been necessarily been that great all year, but Shane Pinto is back. He had the gambling suspension that took him out for half the season. He returns. He actually gets an assist in his first game back. He signs a 1-year deal worth $775K. Shane Pinto back with the Ottawa Senators is, I would love to know your thoughts on that.
Well, it's not like, you know, cue the people that want to troll Sens fans. Like, it's not like this is going to massively turn around the season, I don't suspect, but Shane Pinto is a good player. He's a young player. He made a mistake. He's owned up to his mistake. He's paid the consequences of his mistake. He missed half a season of hockey, which must have been agonizing for him. And I think this is a breath of fresh air moment for the Senators. This is bringing in another piece, and this is a team that is now almost fully healthy. And, you know, unfortunately, I think for the players there, it's way too little too late. In a sense, I don't think too much can be salvaged beyond trying to build for next year. And unfortunately, that's been a familiar refrain for that group of players. And so I don't know how hollow that's going to feel for them. But, you know, getting one of their good young talents back is a positive. And, you know, we'll see what kind of moves Steve Stavros can make at the deadline. I do expect he'll be, you know, one of the sellers, whether it's, you know, the obvious expiring contracts like Tarasenko and Kubalik, you know, Jacob Chychrun's name's now emerging as a potential player to look at moving. You know, you wonder, I mean, Claude Giroux has a full no movement clause. You wonder, did they go to him as a veteran? You know, that hasn't happened just yet, but they do have some moves that some chips to be played when it comes to retooling on the fly a little bit. And then, you know, I think getting Pinto back is a positive for the group. So, you know, that's kind of my sense there. But, you know, unfortunately for the Senators management, I mean, making the coaching change when they did, they didn't get the bounce you hope for. Like, usually there's that surge, right? And it's just kind of been up and down since Jacques Martin replaced DJ Smith. And, you know, there's not enough runway left for them unless they win 15 in a row starting right now. And maybe that's their plan. But I just don't see them, you know, becoming factors in the playoff race this season.
Seems like you keep willing these winning streaks for
Canadian. Well, you always have to leave. I don't have the crystal ball, right? As much as I like to pretend I do sometimes. So yeah, you have to leave room for like the craziness that, like, remember the hamburger season in Ottawa? We didn't have our pod in those days, but they reeled off like 20 wins in 22 games or something to make the playoffs. I mean, that, I guess that thing could happen again. I don't see it at this point in time.
Let's get to ask CJ. I realize with time, I'll this is us pouring tearing back the curtain here. I spent more time than I wanted on that Leafs conversation. You're right. You made the crack about monopolizing time on the Leafs. Yeah, that really kind of just derailed the allotted time I was trying to get for each segment. I got too into it.
That's fine. I mean, just go. Sometimes we got to go with the flow. This will not shock the 100%ers. We don't plan all these episodes out. I mean, there's a loose outline, and then sometimes all hell breaks loose.
That's what makes the best shows, though. It was a good conversation, though. It was a good. Everything's been really great so far. Let's get to these questions on Ask CJ. We do this every Monday. We take in your questions off Discord and on X. Stupid name. No longer Twitter. Trying to make himself cool. Anyway, Nicholas Egan asks, what is a more exciting day as an insider? Trade deadline day or free agent signing day?
Well, free agent frenzy is the easy answer because usually it means you're about to be offered 6 weeks after, give or take. So it's more exciting because you're finally at the finish line. And it literally has last day of school like vibes for anyone who remembers those feelings you'd have right before summer. It's very similar to that. I think the trade deadline day is more exciting from a professional standpoint. There's a little more of the unknown. Like, usually, I'm not saying we know everything, but, you know, there's usually enough of a window between being at the draft and, you know, rumors start to circulate. You get a sense of where the players are going. You know, free agent. Trade deadline day, there can be more surprises. Obviously, you get the immediacy of, you know, these trades happen on March 8th, and then there's games on March 9th and March 10th, and you're going to get to see the players in their new uniforms and, you know, try to imagine how they fit in. And so I think that from a professional standpoint, trade deadline's more exciting. From a personal standpoint, free agent frenzy's the bomb because means that cottage season's just around the corner.
I would love an invite to the cottage one day.
Well, I don't have a cottage, so...
You don't have a cottage?
Dude, no.
Really? I thought you had a cottage.
No, I've never had a family cottage growing up, and I've never had one as an adult myself.
I thought that was just like a prerequisite for all NHL insiders. Like, you have to have a cottage in the middle of Ontario somewhere. You just... Collingwood, dude, or some random, like, scenic place.
That stuff don't come cheap, my friend.
Yeah, but, like, you don't come cheap either, Big Money CJ.
I know. I appreciate that. But, yeah, no cottage for me. So, I would invite you to a cottage if I had one. But I'll have to get you one to someone else's cottage in the meantime.
All right. I await my invitation to Pierre LeBrun's in the mail. From It's Amarando on Discord. I feel like we're at a point in Toronto for homemade trade ideas for CJ. Here's one if you'll entertain it. Considering Yegor Chinnikov from Columbus is asking for a trade and Andrew Peak is available. Yegor Chinnikov, Andrew Peak for Nick Robertson, Fraser Mitton, and either a third or fourth round pick.
I don't know how to even evaluate that.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
I'm not saying it's a, I'm not even saying it's bad. It's like, I'm not poo-pooing the idea straight up. I don't know. It feels to me like if the Leafs liked Andrew Peak, they already would have traded for him. Like, he's kind of been available for a long time. He's a big player. He's a right-hand shot. Like, he's filled a potential need on the Leafs blue line and it hasn't happened. So I don't know. I'm so bad at that. I'm sorry. I'm not poo-pooing it. I have no clue what to say intelligent about that question.
I actually sort of appreciate that because I'm terrible at evaluating that stuff too. So to know that someone in your position also feels kind of hesitant about these things actually makes me feel a little bit better. If that's weird, not like you're obviously really smart and you know everything else, but like,
I just don't know. I don't know if that's realistic. At least what you've put on the table from the Leafs end of things, like Robertson, Minton, like those are the kind of pieces they have to move. I'm not saying they necessarily will. But like that's reasonable, the kind of offer they could make potentially. I don't think you want to get rid of Fraser Minton if you don't have to, but if the right trade's there, you probably could be compelled to. But I have no idea.
Let me hit you with,
because I don't know what Columbus would want either. I guess young players make sense for them, but
yeah. That's true. Let me hit you with one more question from Jordan Romer off X. And I don't know how you'll respond to this one. What's CJ's favorite memory of Pad 1?
Pad 1, baby. That's a Coburg reference.
Yes, I figured it was that. I'm just curious like where this is going to go.
When I was a kid, there was Pad 1 and Pad 2, where the two rinks in Coburg we played out of. Now there's a new rink there. So this is an OG question. This is someone of a certain age and likely from Coburg or has at least played minor hockey in Coburg as a visiting player. Pad 1 was where I used to go watch the Coburg Cougars. I remember one of my big memories of Pad 1 was one time Don Cherry was there for a game and it like blew my mind that he was just there like watching a Coburg Cougars game. I loved when I got to play in Pad 1. Like I was 8 or 9 or 10 or something and I remember having 2 goals in a championship game in Pad 1. So that's probably my best personal highlight there, but it was always, it felt more exciting when you got to play in Pad 1 as a kid because not all your games were there and that was the bigger rink. And unfortunately now it's just closed. Like I'm pretty sure like it's still, the building is there, but I'm pretty sure it was costing the town more to maintain because it's such an old arena that they just basically shuttered it when they built a new one. And for the record, when I scored 3 goals in 21 seconds, I was in Pad 2. So that wasn't even in the primetime rink in Coburg.
Where do you keep all of your trophies and accolades from Pad 1?
I have no... There's probably a couple things in my dad's house in the basement, but I have no trophies from a kid. I think I'm pretty sure we threw them all out at some point when he moved, which is okay.
You got to keep some... At least keep it at your dad's place. Like, those are nice keepsakes.
You don't need childhood trophies. Like I wasn't winning. Okay,
if I won
the Rocket Richard trophy in the NHL, of course you're keeping that for life and giving that to your kids. But when you're talking about minor hockey house league trophies, largely, I mean,
Like, you don't need them. I mean, more like, you know, like your dad, like in his garage or something.
No, I think my dad's like moved house 3 times since I was a kid. And he's like, I don't need to carry this shit around anymore.
Oh, Papa CJ, ruthless.
Hey, I got the memories. That's what matters most.
That's true.
Got the memories. And memories. The clipping from my 3 goals in 21 seconds exists in the Coburg Sports Hall of Fame. Like the newspaper art. You can like find it on the website if you really care to. So.
I love how much of a flex that is. It's like, hey,
I'm I don't know if that's a flex, Sports Hall of Fame. I don't know.
That's anyone a flex for me.
Anyone who knows me from Coburg knows I wasn't even the best athlete or anything close to that. I just sometimes, I don't know. Lightning struck that day.
Hey, man, look, I would kill to be in that situation and point to people and be like, I'm in my local town's Sports Hall of Fame for accomplishing that. Don't sell yourself short.
Do you know what's, and we'll wrap this up, but because we don't need a Coburg corner after a Leafs corner, but
I would love a Coburg corner.
Someone who works for an NHL team sent me a picture that they found on X the other day, and it was a picture of the new rink in Coburg, and it was the press box. And it's funny that I didn't realize this, but it's called the Leighton Dodge press box. And Leighton Dodge was the big sports reporter in town when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And the article, when I scored the 3 goals in 21 seconds, that exists in the Coburg Sports Hall of Fame, was written by Leighton Dodge. So I thought that was cool. Like the rink press box is named after Leighton Dodge, and he's the one who wrote that article.
Was he like the Red Fisher of your town?
For sure. I actually remember seeing him. He used to bike to the games. Like you'd see him pull up on his bike. Like when I was a kid, and he was, you know, I believe there was only one sports reporter. There might've been two. I mean, anyway.
I love it when you reminisce about the Coburg days. Like, don't feel ashamed about that. Like, that's actually like cool. It's nice when people get to listen to these podcasts and get to know more than your hockey knowledge.
There's a fine line though between like someone maybe thinking I'm bragging about this thing I accomplished when I was 12.
You're not. I mean, it's fun. It's good. Yeah. Stop selling yourself short. Great show, Big Money Siege, on a Monday morning. At least that's when we record anyway. We'll be back on Thursday. We will have the What If trade segment. We'll come up with a fancy name for it, but we've already had people reach out on social media excited about this segment. So we're going to have to.
I'm going to have to do some homework then.
I think so.
Just wake up, throw on a hat, and turn the computer on.
I mean, some people might even tweet in suggestions.
Yeah, I'll think it's, don't worry. I got a couple. There's a few in my quiver here. I don't know, as I said last week, I don't know if I can do like 12 weeks worth of them, but certainly 6 or 7 weeks, we should be able to tell some stories.
Back on Thursday, subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever we are listenable, wherever we are watchable on YouTube. Well, it's really just the STPN YouTube channel, but go subscribe to us there. And again, check the link in the description for tickets to our live event on the Friday of NHL All-Star Weekend. That's next weekend.
Awesome weekend.
See you there, I can't wait. I know CJ can't wait either. Let's wrap this baby up. For CJ, I'm Julian. So long and peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie @JK McKenzie.